welcome to Hooplecast. I'm your host, Matt, and joining me are my co-hosts,
Carol,
Matt,
Mel,
and we're a bunch of big ZDs. We had a debate about what Italian food we were going to be.
Eat your own separate cheese-filled noodle.
I wanted to be eggplant parmesan.
Oh, eggplant parmesan.
Oh,
I want gabagool.
Well, it's been a while.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it has.
We took some time off, took a sabbatical, just about an entire month, right? More than a month?
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah,
probably.
I needed a break from podcasting. There were other things I wanted to do, and when you're on so many podcasts as we are, that it can be kind of a grind sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And this should be something that, we look forward to doing, that we want to do in our spare time because we enjoy talking to each other. It shouldn't feel like an obligation. So I was glad for the time off, but ready to jump back into it because we got past this quote-unquote bad shows, and now we are into the quote-unquote good shows, the kind of heyday of the network.
Does it go bad again?
There's a period. Yeah, there's a period of when it's pretty rocky.
No. But sorry to hear that.
Well, that's more my opinion than I think than anything concrete.
Well, I know there's at least one good show coming up because there is actually one HBO show that I have seen. Believe it or not, there was one.
I said, whoa.
Which one?
One.
Yeah. One. Rome.
Oh,
good. There's a lot of good shows coming up. There's also John from Cincinnati and K Street, Tell Me You Love Me, and Luck. These are not great shows. But before we get into our major topics of conversation, some network news here. The biggest thing is that according to Ian McShane, David Milch delivered his movie script to HBO.
Whoa.
His two-hour movie script. And McShane told TV Line, if they don't deliver a finished product, talking about HBO, blame them. And he's spoken to Milch about some of the script, and he'll be seeing him for lunch soon.
Ooh. We're talking lunch here. That gets major.
It sounds promising, but who knows? They're being very secretive about it.
There's also an awful lot that can happen between the script and it actually getting done.
That's true. But hey, Twin Peaks is coming back, so anything's possible, right?
Yep.
Yes.
Don't let your dreams die.
Also, filming has wrapped on the 9th season of Curb Your Enthusiasm. As of September, it will have been 6 years since the last episode aired.
Wow.
I was going to say, that show's still on? I didn't know they were making a new season.
Yeah, they made another season. So it'll probably come back in the fall of this year, maybe early next year. No one really knows for certain, but they allowed Larry David to just take some time off, and when he's ready to get back into it, they said that's fine by us. So I'm happy it's going to be back because it is one of my favorite comedies.
Mm. Never seen it.
Me neither.
Did you ever watch Seinfeld?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like kind of a raunchier version of that. It's really funny.
Yeah, I think I tried to watch one episode and I decided it wasn't for me. But a lot of comedy isn't for me, so.
I would recommend Matt and Mel track it down if they can.
It's too much TV, man.
Too much TV. Yeah, I was thinking about kids these days and their homework. Like, who has time to do homework when you're in the middle of peak TV?
I was doing homework as I was watching it.
You were doing homework?
Yes, I was, yeah.
In present day?
Yes.
You want to tell us what you're studying for?
I'm just doing academic upgrading. Oh, that's all I'm doing.
Nice.
Yeah.
I've been resuming my Japanese language studies. It's been 10 years or more since I took courses in university. But
you and Matt should practice.
I decided I was going to pick it up again, so I've been using some Android apps to freshen up my writing and vocab. We'll see if it sticks.
Nice.
You do that too, Matt?
Yep.
Yeah, you guys should practice.
We should. I need to get a little bit better. But I found some great apps that are nice tutorial apps and things to practice my hiragana, my katakana, my kanji, and some vocab. And it's coming together slowly, but I think I want to keep at it. I think maybe one of my goals might be to take one of those Japanese proficiency tests. And not the high-level ones, but like a beginner one, just to make use of those 2 years I spent at university studying.
Yeah.
It's not a practical language to learn. A practical language would be Spanish or maybe Chinese.
Yeah.
But it's a fun language to learn.
Mm.
So I'm doing it just for me. It's for me.
Yeah, my son's been fascinated by Japanese for years.
I like the sound of the language, yeah.
Yeah.
And German. I like the sound of that one, too.
Really?
Angry languages. Yeah. They both sound like they're always yelling at you.
any language can be an angry language. There's no two ways about that. I took German for 2 years. I took in high school.
Nice.
And then switched to Spanish.
German would actually be a useful language to learn, too, because then you can leave the United States and live in Germany.
Yeah.
Well, technically, Japanese, you could do the same thing. You could go live in Japan.
It's awfully close to North Korea, though.
They don't want you. Yeah, and they don't want you there either, so.
You mean Matt specifically? They don't want him there?
Yes.
Probably. Yeah, I'd be too picky about the food.
Oh, but they would have such great food.
In other David Milch news, he was recruited to help foster development of the third season of True Detective, which is an anthology series that was a huge success when it debuted in 2014, but its second season was a total misfire.
Mm.
And then there was a lot of questions about whether it was going to come back for a third season or not, but it sounds like it is, and David Milch is going to help write it. So that's pretty cool.
Oh.
And of course, people were like, what does this mean for the Deadwood film? Does this mean he's not writing the Deadwood film? Well, it sounds like he wrote the Deadwood film, and now he's writing this other thing.
Mm.
So that's good. Let's see here.
Busy guy.
Well, he's got to pay off those gambling debts. Remember otherwise, we talked about his horse racing habit? Yeah.
Otherwise, Tony Soprano's going to run him over.
That's right. He's going to break his kneecaps.
The 7-episode limited run series Big Little Lies ended a few weeks ago. It was a huge rating success for the network. It debuted at 9 million viewers and averaged 7.1 viewers overall. The author of the book in which the series was based is threatening a sequel season, but I hope it doesn't happen. A lot of people are like, it ended after 7 episodes. It was very satisfying. We don't need another season.
Mm.
That is the series about the Monterey moms, played by Reese Witherspoon, Nicole Kidman, Shailene Woodley. And someone's dead by the end of the first season, but they don't actually tell you who at the beginning of the show. Actually, they don't tell you until the very end of the 7 episodes. So there's a mystery, but it's not really the focus of the show. It's the focus of the show is the moms and how they are very passive aggressive and bitchy towards each other and the dark secrets that they have. It was very entertaining though, I will say. And then I took the BuzzFeed quiz, which Big Little Lies mom are you most like? And I got Madeline. Yep, I'm a Madeline.
What does that mean?
Well, once you see the show, you'll know.
Okay.
All right, I'll read what it says. It says, like Madeline, you're a HBIC. I don't know what that is. All I can think is high bitch and control, maybe? You're confident, bold, and unafraid to tell someone to go F themselves on the head. People like to be on your good side because when you aren't the one running the show, you tend to play dirty. That's not me at all.
Oh, man.
These online quiz things never, I took one and they're like, oh, we can tell what age you are. And I got like 17 or something like that, 15. And then I changed like one thing and it went to 49.
Jeez.
Wow.
I just took it in again. I was just curious. So I changed one thing and pop, it went up to 49. I was like, there's one item difference between a 16, 17-year-old and a 49-year-old? That's really interesting in your world.
It's the same as reading your horoscope, basically.
Well, I'm not a Renata, definitely.
God, who would want to be her?
And I don't think I'm a Celeste. I think I might be a Jane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you say so.
Just repeat the test. You obviously answered one question wrong.
Okay, so the first topic of conversation is a series called The Sopranos, which debuted in January 1999. You may have heard of it.
I've heard of it.
It's set in a state that one of us lives in.
It is indeed. Who is that?
You.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Baby, I believe that you're a fiend and fine. Shake my body, moan under a bad sound. With a blue moon in your eyes, so sing it now. Load of love, things ain't been the same since the blues walked in our town. Did you want it, I'm red one, cause you got that shotgun shine. Shake my body, bone in the red sun, with a blue moon in your eyes, yeah.
Yes, I admit it, and it's interesting because, of course, the stereotypes of New Jersey definitely include the Sopranos, and I will admit that they're not all wrong.
Oh,
that part of our society does exist in New Jersey and in New York City and in New York metropolitan area in general.
Interesting.
I didn't pursue too much in the way of trivia for this because I feel like a lot of people are very familiar with the show. So it didn't seem like I needed to dig too much up about it. I did read an article that was the oral history of The Sopranos from Vanity Fair. And basically they get the cast and the crew together and they just share little anecdotes. And it takes you through various topics of the show. And I found some interesting little tidbits that I may or may not share. If I don't share them, they're in the show notes, which is on the website at hooplecast.com. One thing of note, it was originally conceived as a feature film. Then it was sold as a TV pilot to the Fox network, but they passed, and a lot of networks passed until HBO picked it up. And during the 6 seasons that it was on the air, quote, The Sopranos knocked over Emmys like so many bowling pins. 112 nominations and 21 wins. It was the first cable television series to win the Outstanding Drama Series Award at the Emmys. But before we can talk too much about it, we have to endure the dreaded 60-second plot summary. All of our names are on this little wheel on my Android phone, and when I tap the screen, it's going to spin around and it's going to pick one of our names, and whoever it picks will have to summarize the pilot episode of The Sopranos in 60 seconds with as much detail as possible. If they go over, they lose. If they go ridiculously under, they are a chump. I kind of hope it's me, because I'd rather summarize this than The Corner.
Oh, God.
What if you get both?
If it picked my name, let's say, and then for The Corner it picked it again, it goes to the next person to the left.
Oh.
So, I would rather do it for this one than the other one.
Well, we'll see, I guess.
We will find out.
May the best person win.
The best person did win. It's Mel.
No! All right. I'm ready.
Better this one than the other one.
All right, so I'm starting the stopwatch. 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay, Tony Soprano, he's seeing a therapist, and we're trying to find out why he fainted, and it turns out it's because he had some ducks in his pool, and he kind of got attached to them, and then they left him, and then he kind of got faint and fainted. But it turns out that there's more. He's got a business, a waste disposal business. And so we learn more about his business and the problems that come with this business. And it's all about the business, don't you know? And the family. He's got a pretty interesting family. By interesting, I mean awful. Turns out money doesn't give you happiness. I don't really know how to end this.
Say the end. You're done.
The end. I don't know.
Well, you puttered out there. Puttered? Petered?
Petered.
Yeah. 1:05.
Oh.
Not too bad. Not too bad. It was a valiant effort. You still get the loser horn.
I'm waiting for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'll be spliced in later.
Oh, okay. Just,
if you listen back to the podcast, you just heard it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's the Price is Right horn. It goes bum bum ba bum bum.
Yeah.
Hey, let's start at the beginning. What did you guys think of the iconic main title sequence?
What?
I want to hear from you guys first.
I've always enjoyed it.
I like it.
It's just like the drive from New York to New Jersey, isn't it? Or something?
It is the drive. Yes, he's going from New York to, he's going through the ugliest part of New Jersey. the part that so many things like to show for New Jersey. It's that industrial area right around New York City, just south in the Meadowlands. I thought it was interesting because it does go through the ugliest section, and then it gets to a rundown section, and then a slightly nicer section, and then goes up to his estate.
Mm-hmm.
So they take you through a journey,
yeah.
Which I thought was interesting.
Showing all that rundown stuff is, you know, probably just tying it in with the state of his business and the economy and everything that they keep complaining about.
Mm. Well, it also is. I mean, there are, if you go through that area, it's very easy to go through that kind of a change. But I don't, by the way, he's headed south and I'm further north. So I don't recognize as many spots as a lot of people because I, over the years, I have seen things where they go through, oh, and they were in this spot this time and that spot that time. And it would take a lot longer to get from here to there and things like that. But I don't recognize specifically a lot of the things where they're near his home because that's further south, though Patterson Falls that we'll get to. That's kind of real easy to recognize.
I wondered because that did seem like it would be a recognizable landmark if you had been there or known of it.
Yeah, that's Patterson Falls. That's the Great Falls. It's the largest waterfall or group of waterfalls like east of Niagara Falls, or like the second largest in the eastern United States, counting Niagara Falls. It's the reason that Paterson, New Jersey exists. Alexander Hamilton and friends built a city around it.
Have you been there?
Manufacturing. Yeah, I live right near there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. It's not that far.
Is it typically empty of people? Because it... After that, like, ice cream truck left, or wherever that was, and food truck left.
They were by themselves. Yeah, that would not be unusual, depending on when and where. I haven't even been to that spot where he was. I've always been on the other side of the falls, down where it's, you know, more in the city.
Like, the waterfalls are really big.
They're like, pretty big.
It looked like it was easy to cross that bridge, and you know.
Yeah, there are a couple bridges there. I'm not sure where they come out. Honestly, I haven't spent a lot of time there. It's literally in downtown Paterson. There's a city around it.
Can't blame you for not spending a lot of time there, considering the circumstances.
How many people get
in the show?
How many people get thrown over that bridge?
Yeah. I have not heard of it, but then again, Paterson doesn't have the greatest reputation. No. It's not a great place in general. It's not really Now, one thing I want to make clear before when I said that, yeah, you hear it coming in my voice. When I said that this is part of, you know, the, you know, social structure up here. It's not common. It's not like, you know, that's one of the things you see whenever it's New Jersey. They're either gangsters or Jersey Shore, which was a whole bunch of people from other places that gathered down there for whatever that was. I didn't watch that. Real Housewives of New Jersey. This is not, you know, there's a lot of different types and people in New Jersey from a lot of different backgrounds. And that's just, they are here, but it's not like that's the only people you know. I have been out in the Midwest and the Northwest and had people say like, oh, you're from New Jersey and you survived. That literally is a quote. It's not like that, you know. People live their lives and maybe you know that, you know, there's a family that's involved with this or that. But unless you're part of that, it's very easy to not have any dealings with it at all.
Well, reading through the Wikipedia page for The Sopranos, and there's a section of controversy and how many Italian-Americans and Italian-American groups were anti the show because mm-hmm. of the depictions of Italian-Americans. But mm-hmm. the response to that from the creator, David Chase, was, this is not about Italian-Americans. It's about like a subculture, small group of Italian-Americans and their experience.
Yeah, a very small percentage,
You shouldn't extrapolate what the show was saying about these people to all Italian-Americans. That was not the intent of the show.
Absolutely.
And I think a smart person would know that.
Well, but people have a tendency to generalize. And that's one of the things I just wanted to get out there, that I happen to have some dealings on a very, very superficial basis with some people who would fit into this category in my younger days. And that had mostly to do with the fact that my mother, being an opera singer and everything,
your mother
hung out. What?
Did we know that? Did we know that Carol's mother was an opera singer?
Did you know that?
You didn't know that?
No.
Oh. My mom was an opera singer.
I've heard.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry.
That's very interesting.
I've told other people that enough that I thought I had told you. But anyway, yeah, my mom was an opera singer. And so I spent a lot of time in New York City growing up. And my mom also was very, very gregarious and still is. And so we knew a lot of different type of Italian men specifically, but Italian families and so forth. And like every group in the world, every ethnic group, a lot depends on where you're from and you know, circumstances and all of that. And so, you know, singers and artists and, you know, painters. And there were some people that, you know, we knew that were they really, really do like The Godfather a lot. It's very funny.
I suppose if you are Italian American and you feel like your culture and your ethnicity is underrepresented on television, and when it is represented, it's always in a negative way.
Yeah,
you could take offense, and it would be understandable.
I did not realize for a long time, and a lot of us, I think, are. You know, one of the things that we all can be guilty of is I, for instance, didn't realize how Italian Americans were being portrayed as far as generally being stupid or gangsters or both on television until a friend of mine kept making these comments about, oh, I'm just a stupid Italian. And I got really annoyed after a while and said, hey, I really would appreciate if you wouldn't say that. It's just, he said, well, I'm, you know, that's how people look at Italians. And I just am trying to get there before they, you know. And then I started watching, and I didn't think that was true. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. Then I started watching on TV and I realized that just about every guy with an Italian last name is a combination, not very bright, a womanizer, and very often a thug. Whether you're, you know, you look at a show like Friends, and you got Joey. You know, they didn't make a big thing about him being Italian, but his last name was Truviani.
Yeah.
And he had a lot of the, you know, like...
He had big appetites. Like, he liked to eat. He was like the women.
Yeah, and he wasn't very bright. Kept saying mm-hmm. kind of dumb things. And I saw one TV show after another where if they had that character, they made him Italian. And it was like, oh, crap, I never noticed. And so, yeah, I could see people getting very annoyed.
I want to share with you this quote from Terrence Winter, who was a writer and executive producer on the show. He says, one FBI agent told us early on Monday mornings they would get to the FBI offices and all the agents would talk about The Sopranos. Then they would listen to the wiretaps from that weekend, and it was all mob guys talking about The Sopranos, having the same conversation about the show, but always from the flip side. We would hear back that real wise guys used to think that we had somebody on the inside. They couldn't believe how accurate the show was.
It's funny.
I have to admit that there were things like the whole Godfather thing. There was I'm not going to tell you all the old stories, but back when I was a kid, we used to go to this one pizzeria around the corner and in New York City. And, you know, my mom had pretty good radar for stuff, and she was very friendly with a bunch of people there, and they, you know, Italian men always loved my mother. And so we, you know, we made a lot of friends, and she invited them to our open house where she was apartment sitting and all of this. They came in, they literally, like, they brought a bottle of wine or something. They stood around the outside walls of the thing, were very, very nice, had like a little bit to eat, said, you know, oh, looks like everything's going fine here. They left. They basically were just checking everything out for us. Pictures of the Godfather were everywhere in that pizzeria. I mean, it was just that they, you know, it was just like, you know, it was like hero worship or something, you know?
Right.
Like, that's how we want to be seen, I think, was kind of the feeling. And, yeah, they were very nice. It got a little dicey one day when one of the guys, you got the feeling it was kind of like the ones they always portray as being not quite right, but everybody puts up with him because he's somebody's nephew or something, came in and he started giving me a hard time. I don't remember about what. I was a young girl, and he started giving me somehow a hard time, and I ended up in tears. And a couple of the guys just got really, really upset and just, you know.
With the young punk?
With the punk, yeah.
Yeah.
And basically, I ended up getting a little nervous by how angry they got. And I ended up being like, no, no, everything's fine. Everything's fine. No, this is me. I just cry a lot.
Yeah.
yeah. There were times when it got a little weird. But
And then they killed that guy. On your behalf.
No, there was nothing like that. But it just, I found myself getting nervous. I didn't know, you know, really what, you know, what was up or anything. It was just, you know, the feeling in the room changed. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And you know how your sensors kind of go up and you don't want to make trouble. So,
right.
You know, nothing was going to happen or anything. It was just, you know, so. You know, there's little stuff like that, you know, but that was all New York City. Speaking of which, who was the psychiatrist?
Lorraine Bracco.
I know her. Yeah, I know her from somewhere. Right?
I think she was
in one of the shows we watched earlier.
Which one?
One of the prison ones.
Oh, yeah.
No, Edie Falco was in Oz. That's who you're thinking of.
Oh, I thought you just asked who the therapist was.
The therapist is to Lorraine Bracco.
Oh, right. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, it's the wife that was in. Yeah, sorry.
I believe because they wanted Lorraine Bracco to play Carmela Soprano, but she's like, no, I don't want to play a mob wife. I've done that role. I want to be the psychiatrist. So here we see a representation of an Italian-American who is very educated and not mobbed up.
Mm.
I mean, she's just a normal professional person. So that's and a positive portrayal.
But it's interesting that they, you know, like, obviously they still have that relationship with the mob people because she obviously knows, like, her and her boyfriend or whatever, they knew a lot about the Sopranos, you know.
They probably read about
that. They know of that lifestyle.
What did her boyfriend do for a living? I don't remember. Anybody remember?
No. When they were at the restaurant, that was the only time we saw him,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I don't recall.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought that might be one reason he knew who he was. You know, it's like one of those things of, depending on your profession, you might know of somebody more. I want to point out that she has very much a New York accent. That is not a New Jersey accent. People keep thinking that New York accents are New Jersey accents, and they're not.
Well, she is from Brooklyn.
Yes, she is.
She was married to Edward James Olmos.
Really?
Know that.
Yeah. Huh. She was nominated for an Academy Award for her role in Goodfellas.
Wow.
That's where I know her from.
Not the movie Hackers, because she was in that too.
Who did she play in Goodfellas?
She was the mob wife.
What? Really? That was her?
That's what it says here.
Wow. I didn't realize that was the same person.
She received her big career break when offered the role as the mobster wife Karen Hill in Goodfellas, which earned her an Academy Award nomination for Best Supporting Actress and was nominated for a Golden Globe for Best Supporting Actress Motion Picture.
Yeah, she was good in that movie.
Cool. Yeah, that's where I know her from.
Oh, about the main titles, I read a little bit of trivia that David Chase wanted to show New Jersey a lot in the titles to emphasize that this was a show in New Jersey, not New York, where a lot of previous mob films and shows were set. Which is underscoring the location, that it's
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's very definitely, you can't get away from it being New Jersey.
This was a very pilot-y pilot. By that I mean it's a little atypical in how much exposition we get.
Mm-hmm.
The device of him going to the psychiatrist and basically he ends up narrating the pilot for us, saying, "This is my family. These are my friends. This is what I do. This is my cousin Christopher." Like, that's not typical for the rest of the show, I find.
It's an interesting way to do exposition.
Yeah. But yeah, later on, he goes to Dr. Melfi's office, and they just talk and have a normal conversation. Well, and that's just a scene, but
yeah,
it's not.
She would have to learn who these people are, so might as well tell us at the same time.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah, it is an interesting plot device.
Well, also the fact that he's telling her one thing, but we're seeing another thing, which does seem to continue on into the second episode.
Oh, did you watch the second episode?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I watched two episodes of both of them.
Okay. Well, feel free to say not sort of non-spoilery things about the second one if you want to. I've seen the entire show. Matt and Mel have seen like the first three seasons. Is that right?
Yeah.
And but there might be listeners out there who have only seen the pilot.
Okay, because I thought we were supposed to watch the first two.
I didn't expect you to watch both of them.
Okay.
Glad that you did.
Yeah. Okay.
So I love Nancy Marchand as the mom.
She is good, isn't she?
Oh.
The mother from hell. The most passive aggressive.
Yes.
That character infuriates me.
Yeah.
Well, it infuriates Tony.
She's good at what she does.
She like literally gives me like almost gives me panic attacks like myself.
Just like listening to her talk?
Yeah. Just like.
And why is that?
Just because I know too many people who are like that.
Now I want to know who's like that in your life.
So he takes the stereo into her house, and one of the first things she says is, "I know his mother, like I see his mother," and he calls her every day.
Yeah.
And then he's like, "Oh, well, I don't call you every day, but look what I brought you, Mom." "Oh, I don't want that. Let me dance with you." "I don't want to dance." You can't win with her. She's one of the people you can't win with.
No.
No, I just ran into Uncle June.
Oh, that one. You think he ever comes to see his sister-in-law?
Remember Artie Bucco? Kid who I went to elementary school with?
Artie! Oh, yeah, I still see his mother. She tells me he calls her every day.
Yeah, well, Uncle June's gonna make a problem for Artie. Could affect his livelihood.
What's that?
CD player.
For who? For me?
Yeah.
I don't want it.
You know, you love music. All the old stuff's being reissued on CD. All your old favorites. Pajama Game, Connie Francis. Here. Come on. Come on, move around a little bit. It's good for you. Come on.
What? What? Whoa, come on.
Come on. Come on.
Oh, stop this.
Might need something to occupy your mind. When Dad died, you're going to do all kinds of things.
Oh, he was a saint.
Yeah, I know he was. But he's gone. You're going to travel. You're going to get a volunteer job. You've done nothing.
Stop telling me how to live my life. You just shut up.
The depths she goes to as the series goes on, like, just, she's just a horrible person.
But she's obviously, like, yeah, she's, I don't know. I feel like she's obviously that way for, like, a reason, you know, like, I think it didn't just come, like, randomly.
I think they try to, like, later on, I think they try to explore her backstory, and there's, like, maybe...
Well, as an adult, they did, but not as a child. Like, you don't know what happened in her childhood.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But you think that they're going to try to make you... empathize with her or something, and no. There's no way.
I have a couple friends with mothers like that.
I feel like, yeah, it is. It is a mother thing, isn't it? Like, I have a grandmother who's like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. It is. It's probably like, I feel like it's partially like a mother thing. No offense, Carol. Not all mothers.
Oh yeah, all mothers are like that, right? No. No, I don't think so. It's really upsetting when you see something like that. The only thing she did say it because she said something about, well, daughters are better or something like that.
Yeah.
Even though her daughters are doing nothing for her.
Yeah.
And I mean, I have got two friends who have mothers who pull all of that same stuff on them.
Yeah. You know? And it's funny because with my grandmother, like, because she's a little bit like that too, it's no, her sons can do no wrong, or, you know, her sons-in-law can do no wrong, but all the women in her life are awful. They can't do anything right because they're women.
And with the ones I have, let's see. Well, one of them is only boys in the family.
Yeah.
So the son that does do stuff for her, you know, he gets no credit for anything. And the other one is really worse than useless. And, you know, it's one of those things of, oh, but you have to understand what he's gone through and this and that.
Playing favorites and stuff, and basically playing games with everybody in your life.
Yep.
Surrounding you just so you can get your way.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Now, admittedly, I always used to say that, you know, whenever people are in an oppressive society, they get sneaky. And you know, some of the old, you know, the old world ways of doing things can be very repressive.
Mm.
There's no two ways about it. Yeah. You know?
And it's probably got a lot to do with what Tony was talking about during the episode, too, about how, you know, like he was saying, oh, you know, back in the old days, nobody had this depression stuff that you're talking about, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was a man's man and blah, blah, blah. And but just really repressed. Like, they just couldn't let their feelings show through for fear of, you know, showing any kind of weakness. And that means that you can't survive when you show your weakness, you know.
Anxiety attacks are legitimate psychiatric emergencies. Suppose you were driving and you passed out.
Let me tell you something. Nowadays, everybody's got to go to shrinks and counselors and go on Sally, Jesse, Raphael and talk about their problems. Whatever happened to Gary Cooper, the strong, silent type? That was an American. He wasn't in touch with his feelings. He just did what he had to do. See, what they didn't know was once they got Gary Cooper in touch with his feelings, that they wouldn't be able to shut him up. And then it's dysfunction this and dysfunction that and dysfunction my fungal.
You have strong feelings about this.
Let me tell you something. I had a semester and a half of college, so I understand Freud. I understand therapy as a concept. But in my world, it does not go down. Could I be happier? Yeah. Yeah. Who couldn't?
Do you feel depressed? Do you feel depressed?
Since the ducks left.
Also, there's a whole thing of you, as a man, especially father and all of that, you're supposed to always be right, and you're supposed to have the answers to everything.
Yeah.
So if
that puts a lot of pressure on a person.
Exactly. It's a ridiculous amount of pressure, and it also puts them in a position where if they're not right, because it's going to happen, and you've got to cover for it. however you can. And if that means making the kid who figured out that you weren't right about something feel horrible about themselves and act as though they're an idiot or whatever, then that's what you're going to do to be able to, you know, save face in the situation.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make for good parenting, and it doesn't, you know, make for, but, you know, that's, if that's how you've been raised, with this idea that you have to be strong, and strong means right, you know, then you do what you need to do, and you don't know another way.
At the dinner between Tony and Carmela, Tony was ashamed to admit to Carmela that he was seeing a psychiatrist. She thought it was wonderful.
I know.
Well, he thinks it'll get killed.
Yeah.
Showing weakness. Because he doesn't want to show weakness to anybody. You know, he was saying, like, if they find out I'm taking Prozac, they'll know that I'm weak, and that's going to get me killed.
Mm-hmm.
And he could be right.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because they obviously, like, in that business, they would prey upon anybody that's shows any weakness. You know, you'd be at the bottom of the totem pole at that point.
And the thing is, it's not, you know, the definition of weakness is their definition.
It's subjective.
Not reality. It's the same thing we get with, you know, these things where some kid, you know, kills somebody on the street, and you say, you know, why did you kill this person? And they say, well, he disrespected me, and you can't, you know, if I let that happen, then, you know, my life is over. And it's like, that's, you know.
Dumb.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Understandable. Like, I understand the psychology of it, but it's really dumb. I guess that's why I kind of have a problem with this show, is that as well acted as it is and well scripted, and in later season it becomes very kind of groundbreaking in a way. There's some departure episodes, like dream episodes and things full of symbolism and stuff, like really meaty stuff you can chew over. You don't really get a sense of it at the beginning of the first season, but they experiment a lot and they, you know, but the characters can be just so petty. I really have a hard time with that.
Well, but it's pretty much.
I'm not saying it's not accurate.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's not, that it's not, it doesn't make psychological sense. It does. But I don't enjoy watching it.
It's something that you don't like.
I can understand the, you don't like watching it.
Like when one mobster, let's say, intercepts a truck of stolen goods from another mobster in another part of the city. He stole my stuff. Well, it wasn't really your stuff anyway, so you don't really have the high ground here.
I mean, there's a lot of logic that doesn't make sense, but that's you know,
true.
It is. No, and I understand it. Logically, I understand it. I just
and it's not like a culture you like.
It's not a culture. I don't like to spend a lot of time in that world with people.
I don't blame you for that.
Who behave in petty ways.
I felt about the corner. I didn't, you know, it's like that type of stuff. You just don't like watching that kind of stuff because you don't like that lifestyle. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Yeah. Especially the first episode.
It's why I put off watching The Wire for so long. I don't know if I'm ready to live in a world that feels so real.
Yeah.
I can read articles about it and read news stories about it. I don't know if that's what I want for my dramatic entertainment or my viewing, you know.
I think for me, I understand exactly what you're saying because I have very definite problems with, you know, as Mel said, I had that problem with the first episode of The Corner, definitely, and was getting into the idea of, you know, a documentary would probably be better.
Mm-hmm.
But in the case of The Sopranos, I think because they were really looking at, you know, there was this theme of the anxiety associated with coming to the end of an era.
Economic anxiety, make America great again.
Yes, along with, you know, I mean, his whole world and the way things are being looked at in his world is being turned upside down in American culture. And American culture is moving away from that. And I think the fact that it was looking at this culture clash and coming into a different era. I mean, he's right. It you know, it is a different era than it was for his parents and all of that. And it's that way in general for most of America. He's just like one microcosm.
Did you notice how they kept playing all these old 50s songs throughout the show, too? Almost like they were trying to really push that aspect of it.
But I have to admit that that's... I don't mean to push stereotypes because, you know, but, you know, Connie France, when he was saying about Connie Francis and all of that, yeah, that's,
that's why it was so bizarre at AJ's birthday party at the very end of the episode, or in the background, I'm hearing No More I Love Yous by Annie Lennox. I'm like, how did this, why are they listening to this?
It depends on which generation too, you know. That's the thing. It's like there's all these different clashes. I mean, he's talking to his mother.
Maybe Meadow turned that on, because I can't think of what character on the show would want to listen to that.
Speaking of Anthony Jr., I hate the concept of naming someone after you. There's an Anthony Jr. here. There's also
Uncle Jr.
Uncle Jr. Uncle and there's Jr. The guy who owns the restaurant. There's his son is a junior. Art Jr.
Yeah, Arthur. Yeah.
Arthur Jr., like, just, it's so egotistical.
Yeah, it's very, very common. People, I'm with you on that. I'm not a
Is it not a Catholic thing, or if it's just...
I think it's a macho thing. I don't know.
No, a lot of it is cultural. I mean, the British used to do this, like when I was trying to go back through my father's family tree, they're British. And... You know, it's like, okay, I have a grandfather, Joe. The first son was named Joe.
Of course.
Of course. Well, but the first son's middle name is the mother's maiden name. Hmm. So it's not Joe Jr., it's Joe, and then, you know, the middle names are different. So I've got a whole mess of Joes on that side of the family going back. But,
Joe,
you know, yeah, it's like...
Joe begat Joe.
Well, and isn't the eldest son like the most important son? So we'll name the eldest son after the father. And then the second son, well, you have a different name. Why do you have a different name? You're not as important.
Obviously.
Well, I don't know. It's not supposed to be that way.
You don't have your father's name.
I know of a guy who named his children after himself, but like a boy and a girl, Eric and Erica. Well, that's really going over.
I think you're thinking of George Foreman.
No, yeah, where he named all his kids George.
Yeah.
Fun fact that the character of AJ Soprano was ranked number 10 in TV Guide's list of TV's 10 biggest brats.
Really?
Who was named that? Tony?
AJ, Anthony Jr.
AJ. Anthony Jr.
So no fucking ZD now?
Oh, yeah. He is a brat.
Yeah.
He is totally a brat.
He loses a lot of his kid fat as the show goes on.
He does.
It's almost completely different, really, from season 1 to season 6.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really grows into his own body. That sounds weird to say about a kid.
It does happen, though.
Nice to see all these characters so young and alive.
Yeah.
So many of them end up dead by the end of the show.
Yeah.
I won't say who. Oh, I was going to say, one thing I do like about The Sopranos is that it's very darkly comic. It is very funny.
And,
yeah. Did we lose someone?
We busted a lost girl. She's like, it's darkly funny? No!
I'm out of here. I disagree. Goodbye.
Hi, Carol.
She's back.
No idea. I have no idea what just happened.
Also dropped my other self. Self.
Self. Your other self.
Not a Jersey accent.
No, what accent that was.
Not a Jersey accent. No. Let's see. Jersey things in this. West Essex and Boonton. I was like, really? These guys were from way out in West Essex and Boonton. Somebody in Boonton?
Boonton.
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 Where the hell is that?
Boontown.
Exactly.
Boonton. Boonton is a town in New Jersey that's west of me. And you figure those guys, as far as I could tell, I didn't do the research on it. I know that they've said where he's supposed to be actually be from. I should probably look that up. But I mean, I got the feeling from the fact that they were on the turnpike and some of the landmarks that they were south and east of me. And Boonton is like a little south, but west. And West Essex, I think I taught in West Essex for a while, actually. Hmm. We're talking about the kid who got killed in the Czechoslovakian kid said he went to West Essex. And I think I taught there. It's like in the Caldwell.
It must be interesting for you to see all these places that you know in a
show.
It's
a little weird.
Yeah.
It's a little weird. I had a little bit of a preview when I actually watched the Real Housewives of New Jersey for a little while, just because, unfortunately, yes, they are from around here. my son went to school with some of the kids from it. And it was weird because they played ball at my old grade school, the ball field out in the back of my old grade school and stuff like that. And that was weird seeing that on TV. But, yeah, they mentioned Watchung Avenue, which I noticed that they said where on Watchung Avenue, and then they handed them a piece of paper. And Watchung Avenue is a long, long street. So I was like, okay, they're making sure that you can't pin anything down. Mm. Star Ledger, New York Star Ledger is the main paper in the in northern Jersey. Oh, it was stuff.
So watching this, I was wondering if you were not familiar with the premise of the show, how long would it take for you to suss out that Tony was in the mafia? Because they don't come out and say it.
Oof, well, it'd be kind of hard to not know the premise of the show because this is such a famous show, you know.
Yeah.
But at the time, yep, when it started, yeah, before it was in the part of the cultural zeitgeist.
Yeah. I'm just trying
to. How long before you're like, wait?
Probably just when they start. The mafia? When they start talking like stereotypical mobsters, I guess.
I guess.
That and. Yeah,
I think when
like the car scene for sure.
But
like
they could just be guys beating up another guy.
No, yeah. I think the car scene would have done it.
Really? Yeah,
you might have gotten it when she started saying,
"Oh, the neighbor." And
wait
stuff?
A minute, yeah, the neighbor.
Yeah.
Oh,
That's what I was thinking too. Like I was actually thinking about that during the show too. Is like if I had never heard of this show, right, like, when would I figure this out?
And how much of it would have been because you'd seen things of this nature? Like you were familiar with the world enough by through other programs, yeah, and movies.
I think
you're like, oh, I think I know what's going on here.
Yeah. I'm guessing you would have figured it out when she suddenly stopped him and said,
oh, about the, yeah,
you know, if there's anything, we need to get some ethical thing limits, oh, yes, here. And if you Dr. say Melfi. Anything, right. I think, because that comes before we just had coffee. You know, the car scene,
yeah,
where he tells her that they just had coffee and, you know, in fact, they beat the guy up.
And there was this issue of an outstanding loan.
Can I stop you for a second? I don't know where this story is going, but there are a few ethical ground rules we should quickly get out of the way. What you tell me here falls under doctor-patient confidentiality. Except if I was to hear, let's say, a murder was to take place. Not that I'm saying it would, but if a patient comes to me and tells me a story where someone's going to get hurt, I'm supposed to go to the authorities. Technically. You said you were in waste management.
The environment.
Dr. Cusimano, besides being your family physician, is also your next-door neighbor. See what I'm saying? I don't know what happened with this fellow. I'm just saying.
Nothing. We had coffee.
Yeah.
Who is Dean from The Leftovers, if anyone watches The Leftovers. I just saw him last week on that show. Looks completely different. Older, bigger.
And I now know what The Leftovers is.
Yep. He edumacated you.
Yes.
After Robin humiliated you.
I actually, he tried to humiliate me. It takes more than that to humiliate. I started writing something, a smart ass comment back, but I
not worth it.
Yeah.
He's like, I gots to be me.
Yeah, I started writing a smart ass comment back to him on that one too, and I controlled myself.
Artie's wife, yeah. Also
Artie's wife.
Artie's wife, you know, Artie was the owner of the restaurant.
Oh, right.
Right. She's like, these guys are in the mafia, and they come in with their mafia guy types, mm-hmm. their friends, yeah. and they, you know, they offer their patronage to our business, and I don't like them. So I think at that point, you would know what's going on.
Oh, you should have figured it out long before that. Mm. But, you know, I mean, okay, that spells it out. And she, you know, it's interesting. She had a really, really, that was kind of an important thing when she did that, because there is a whole, you know, there's like the under, okay, there's a few things that I thought were really interesting in this whole thing. The nephew isn't a made guy, and I thought that was interesting in the fact that he really resented it, made sense. And the hierarchy of, you know, the resentment with Uncle Junior having not been made guy before Tony's father had been. Tony's father must have been the younger son, too.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
Yeah, because, so he was made guy before Junior, so that would not have gone over well.
He's named Junior because he's the firstborn.
And exactly, yeah. And then, but when she said that, there's a whole thing of, you know, doing favors. Like, if you take something from these guys, you have to be aware that you're going to probably be asked for something in return down the line.
Right, strings are attached.
Strings are always attached. So she's concerned about strings being attached. And... Although-
She was right to think that, but I don't know if they would have been this time.
Yeah, because it was basically like so they could do something well, for it was, themselves.
No, he was trying to save his friend's business.
Right, which interestingly enough, you know, in this case, it would have behooved them to take the tickets. Now, on the other hand, just because they were giving him the tickets, for a reason that had nothing to do with wanting payback later, doesn't mean that they wouldn't have later, if it became convenient, reminded him that he got the tickets and they now owed them something.
But Tony seems to love that guy for some reason. And that guy's like oblivious to them being in the mob, it seems. His wife's not.
You cannot accept a gift like that from Tony Soprano. No way.
Listen to me, Charmaine. If I gotta stick my hand up the ass of one more lobster without taking a break... I'm going to go postal.
Arthur, I don't even want to talk about it anymore. Please. Art, Melissa, come on, honey. It's time to go home.
Honey, you have to get away. We have to get away for the marriage.
No, it's bad enough that these mobsters still come in and patronize the place, okay?
But so what? We're not connected.
Right, because we just turned down those tickets.
But the tickets were comps. Tony is a labor leader.
Arthur, please, grow up. Does the mind not rebel in any possible scenario under which dentist is sending the Don of New Jersey first class on a Norwegian steamship? Come on, Arthur. Somebody donated their kneecaps for those tickets.
I don't know about oblivious. He just
chooses to put up a blind eye to all that.
Yeah.
There's definitely denial happening here.
Yeah.
That your business suspiciously explodes.
Well, I think he does. He has the same affection for Tony that Tony does for him. Like he seems to view him as this like bigger brother figure or something.
Mm.
I think there's a mutual friendship there. They like each other.
Yeah.
But Tony had he was afraid that his friend was leaving his circle.
Yeah.
And now because the damage to his business will require Artie and his wife to be less picky about who comes. To their restaurant.
Yeah.
It's awful. You wouldn't do that to a friend.
Nope.
Well, he was trying
friends
to save
it. Friends don't blow up other friends' restaurants.
Yeah, but it was his way of trying to save his business.
Yeah.
In this weird way.
Yeah, if a guy got whacked there, then nobody would go anymore.
Yeah.
I actually thought that they might be, when he was making arrangements for something to be done, I wasn't sure whether he was going to have the guy killed that his uncle killed like but have him killed somewhere else.
Yeah.
That's another way to solve that problem.
Yeah, but the uncle, you know how stubborn the uncle was there, you know, so.
Yeah, but if the guy was already dead, you know.
Yeah.
What's he going to do, drag him in and kill him again?
Yeah, but the uncle probably would have been mad that it wasn't him that did it, you know, or wasn't him that orchestrated the killing, you know. Like, there's, again, the culture. Petty things.
And the guy was still alive by the end of the episode, so.
Yeah.
He didn't get killed at all. So, in a way, Tony saved somebody's life by blowing up his friend's business.
Boy, that is a stretch.
A friend of mine.
And the nice thing that he did for Artie is he didn't even give Artie the, you know, any options or information. Really just took the burden off of him. Why not, you know, looping him into any of this?
No,
you
do not want to be looped in. Absolutely do not want to be looped in. A friend of mine, his family was associated with various people. And
involved in waste management.
No, they weren't. And it wasn't in New Jersey, by the way. It was not in New Jersey. Though they later lived in New Jersey, but they weren't in when they were friendly with this group. The father, like the grandfather, had been associated with some people very closely, but the father had not, and he gave his son the advice that, don't get involved with them. If they need a favor, do a favor, but just, you know, stay out of it. And do, you know, just have as, be nice, but just have as little to do with it as possible. And that's pretty much, you know, Artie probably knows about it. It's just, you know.
He's being as nice as possible.
Yeah. Stay out of it. They're friends of his. That's the way to keep it.
Yeah.
They're customers.
At the restaurant that, where Dr. Melfi and her beau run into Tony, the hostess at that restaurant is played by Drea De Mateo, who will be recast later as Christopher's girlfriend.
His
girlfriend, Adriana, and she'll win an Emmy for that performance. Mm. But she's in the pilot as the hostess of the restaurant.
I didn't even recognize her.
Yeah, I didn't recognize her. Mm-hmm.
That's just a little fun fact, throwing that out there.
Yeah.
It was fun to see her.
Mm-hmm.
Any other notes? Want to talk more about the ducks?
Oh, yeah, the ducks.
Tony had a dream.
That was a weird dream.
It was a very disturbing dream.
I had a dream last night. My belly button was a Phillips head screw. And I'm working on screwing it. And when I get it unscrewed, my penis falls off. You know, I pick it up and I'm holding it and I'm running around looking for the guy who used to work on my Lincoln when I drove Lincoln so he can put it back on. And, you know, I'm holding it up and this bird swoops down and grabs it in its beak and flies off with it.
What kind of bird?
I don't know. Seagull or something.
A water bird?
I saw the birds last week on cable. You think maybe that planted the idea?
What else is a water bird?
Pelican? Flamingo?
What about ducks?
It's goddamn ducks.
I was surprised.
He has a lot of weird dreams throughout the series.
I'm kind of surprised he confessed that.
Yeah,
he confessed it, but
he was like honest about it. Yeah,
yeah. Because
you could consider that as being a little bit emasculating, I guess, for him, anyways.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was interesting that he latched on to those ducks, though. I thought that was.
It was pretty cute.
Yeah.
To see him with the ducks.
Yeah.
Getting such enjoyment out of them.
Yeah.
When when they were talking about how, you know, losing his family, there was a piece of me that was like, well, but is he really losing his family? And then I realized, oh, yeah, family, not not necessarily nuclear family, but, you know, family means a lot of different things, especially if you're connected.
As part of the marketing campaign for the show was, like, if I think it was like, if one family doesn't kill him, this other family will, or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, of course, Carmella is complicit in anything her husband does because she knows exactly what he's doing. She may have blinders up, too, but...
Oh, yeah. When she says, what's different between you and me? You're going to hell when you die. I was like, really, lady?
Had some good times. Had some good years.
Here he goes now with the nostalgia.
Hey, all I'm saying is no marriage is perfect.
Well, having that Kumad on the side helps.
I told you I'm not seeing her anymore. How do you think I feel having that priest around all the time?
Don't even go there, all right? Father is a spiritual mentor. He's helping me to be a better Catholic.
Yeah. Well, we all got different needs.
What's different between you and me is you're going to hell when you die.
Yeah, come on. She should talk.
Yeah.
She keeps an assault rifle in her house.
Yeah.
Well, that's just good planning on her part. Yeah. But, I mean, she knows the deal. I mean, it's ridiculous that she's like, oh, I'm, you know, learning to be a better Catholic. Yeah, except that you're totally complicit in everything that he's doing, so don't get on your high horse.
Mm-hmm. Mm. They revisit that plot about her and the priest, except they recast the priest. But it's the same scenario.
Yeah, I was going to say the priest did not look familiar. I remembered him looking different.
Yeah, different priest, but same plot.
Yes.
I think my favorite scene is after Tony picks up Meadow from her, was it a volleyball game?
Yeah.
And then they go into that church. And mm-hmm. It's just a very quiet scene where he's telling her about his family and the men before him who built this beautiful place and how important, you know, history is and how important your family is. And James Gandolfini is so quiet in this scene, but he really draws me in. He, you know, often we see him like be very explosive, but in this scene, he was just, I don't know, felt like I could connect with him in this moment.
Yeah.
Because he was just being a self-reflective person.
I have a hard time disliking the character. He's a likable guy, usually.
Mm-hmm. Despite lots of charisma.
Yeah.
Well, also, they're showing a lot of his vulnerability that he's not showing other people. We're seeing because we're looking into his soul, basically, to a great degree.
But he's not vulnerable. He's obviously likable enough. Like, people seem to like him, you know?
Yeah, sure.
Girls and stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The interesting, like, there's so many things, like that church scene. Mm. When he was talking about that, again, a friend of mine heard almost the exact same story of, you know, they came from Italy, they were marble and stone workers. And, you know, one part of the family and the part of the family were tile workers and stuff. And, you know, and I was like, yeah, that's, you know, and talk about like the, all the tile mosaics in the New York subway system from back at the beginning of the 1900s. Friend of mine's grandfather, you know, worked on those mosaics, you know, straight out of Italy. And they, you know, I went around and saw some of the stone buildings and stuff that his other grandfather had built in different parts of northern Jersey and all. And one side was like, no, stone is no good. Marble is the only thing. And, you know, there's big, you know, brouhaha between the two in-laws about what's better, stone or marble and stuff. You know, so he was talking about that. I was like, yeah, okay, I've heard this story before. So, I mean, they hit a lot of things on the head.
Mm.
It's a hallmark of a good show that it can have tense scenes, scary scenes, dramatic, sad scenes, and funny scenes all in the same episode.
Mm-hmm.
Something I thought Deadwood did so well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that I was missing in our next show when we get to it.
Yeah.
And kind of understandably, I mean, it was a different kind of show.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
We got a record number of feedback.
Ooh.
First one's from Harold. I'll just take out his part about The Sopranos and I'll paste it in the Skype, and we'll have Matt read this.
Okay. Matthew.
The Sopranos. I was a devoted fan of The Sopranos when it originally aired, but have not gone back to rewatch it, so I was curious how it would look 18 years or so later. Holy crap.
yeah, really.
I think it holds up pretty good. My only knocks on it are that some of the scenes are set poorly. For example, I'm thinking of the scene at the Bada Bing where you mostly see one isolated table surrounded by darkness, and that some of the dialogue is a bit on the nose. Everything about this show would get better, but even limiting myself to this pilot, it is a remarkable hour of TV. As to whether the show is dated, it has and it hasn't. Obviously, there are things like the You've Got Mail, AOL logon, and Tony going out to pick up the newspaper instead of looking at his phone, and some big things like the suburban McMansion and SUV, but what stuck out to me was the line about Tony feeling like he got in at the end of things. I think that is a feeling that a lot of people have now more than ever, and it is that sense of loss of opportunity and general sourness of life that feels very modern. I'm certain that Tony's crew voted for Trump.
Without a doubt.
For many viewers, this was another mob show, and they got a chase, a beating, and a whacking. There was a mob hit postponed by an arson. There's HMOs and sanitation schemes. But what grabbed my attention back in 1999 was that these were characters who acted, talked, and looked like they like the people I grew up with. Parenthetically, I grew up in Brooklyn in the 1970s and 80s and am married to an Italian-American. My mother-in-law is a lot like Livia Soprano.
Oh God. No.
Sadly, this is true and not a mother-in-law joke.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's no. Awful.
I'm sorry, Harold.
Yeah, I'm sorry too, Harold.
But more than just the references to Gabagool and
Sfogliatelle.
Scenes like when Carmela shows up to the MRI to support Tony, and it quickly escalates into her telling him off, ending with her giving him a little wave as the machine draws him in.
She's a piece of work. That's what my parents would say about her. She's a piece of work.
The scene where he visits his mother. He offers her music and dancing. She offers him food. Neither one wants what the other is offering. The subtext of these scenes are that Tony is cheating on Carmela, and he's trying to get his mother to move into a senior community, but more importantly, they are introductions to the characters and their relationships. Interactions like these feel realistic, like they have been going on for years and years. With about three exceptions, Twin Peaks, The Simpsons, and Seinfeld, I basically did not watch TV shows in the 20 years before The Sopranos. My TV was for sports, news, and movies. Nothing on TV seemed better to me than any of those options, until I flipped on HBO and saw this. It was a landmark both for TV and for my own personal viewing habits, because shows like this made me want to come back and watch, to think about and rewatch each week's episode, and obsess about TV in a way that I hadn't, except during the original run of Twin Peaks. It made me search out message boards like TV Without Pity, and then podcasts. So you have David Chase to blame for all my feedbacks.
Yay!
Thank you, David Chase.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think Harold hits it on the head that there's a reality to the characters, and to they're not just they're people that we grew up with, and.
I love how he says it feels like they've been having these relationships for years and years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It does feel like. The world does feel lived in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they are bringing back, like, generations of stuff. Like, connecting what's happening now to what happened back when. And there's a continuity that they recognize that, does it very well.
That was some great feedback.
Was.
Thank you, Harold.
Harold, that's your best yet. I'm not ranking them, but if I was ranking them, I'd rank that number one.
Can you live up to it with the next feedback?
Let's see here. I've got more feedback. I think this one's from Nutty. Nutty Nuchas. And Mel, we'll have you read this one.
Sopranos, when it aired, was something new and completely different than anything else out there. It was the beginning of the wave of shows that the main character was a horrible person and the viewer ends up rooting for them. It paves the way for shows like Dexter. One problem was that people were glorifying mafia culture and shows like Growing Up Gotti happened. When you grow up in the tri-state area, you learn you don't talk about stuff like that. Then The Sopranos come out, and everyone is pretending to be a hooked-up gangster, which is not just foolish-looking, but could be dangerous. Things you didn't talk about, suddenly people are talking about. It was weird to live through. Even to this day, I see posers talking big, and I just shake my head and keep my mouth shut. The show had some seriously good actors, and they got a lot of stuff very real. They researched well, but having a former mob guy in the cast helped, too.
Which guy?
Was it James Gandolfini? Was he a former mob guy?
No, I don't think so.
Probably somebody minor.
Yeah, I wonder. I remember how the FBI and cops were making a lot more busts because they learned more about how mobs were operating by watching The Sopranos, which is pretty funny. That is funny. It seems like the writers on the show were doing a lot better than the FBI, I guess. Anyways, thanks, Nutty.
I remember an episode where the FBI is trying to plant a bug in Tony's house, and it kind of turned into a farce.
Yeah.
Yes, I remember that. The basement or whatever. Yeah,
I thought that was quite humorous.
Yes, it was.
I don't know. It seems like, unless there's a lot more coming, it seems like by 1999, cops pretty well knew all about this kind of stuff. I mean, I also, my first boyfriend was a New York City detective, and I heard a certain amount.
So much about Carol this episode, it's great.
That's funny.
And he was in the intelligence division, and you know, some funny stories came back. You know, things like, you know how they keep saying, "Oh, let's go to an outside line to call me," and they'd go to a payphone. Well, if a certain payphone, if they could show that a certain payphone was being used for criminal activity on a regular basis, they could get a warrant to tap the phone. So sometimes they would have these phones tapped. And just like when you were saying earlier about the cops coming in and then listening, talking about The Sopranos and then listening to The Sopranos and listening to the tapes and hearing the mob guys talking about The Sopranos. Mm. You know, I remember one phone call that I was told about was one where the guy is like, "Hey, I think this phone is dirty now. Okay, we shouldn't use that phone anymore. What phone should we use? Hey, okay, let me give you the number. Blah, 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 blah. Oh, okay, fine. We'll talk on that number." Which, you know, the bottom line of that, as I recall, was thank goodness these guys aren't smarter than they are.
Yeah.
You know, so they've been, it's been a cat and mouse game for a long time. I don't think, I mean, none of this looked real surprising. As they said, when they were talking about these guys that have been writing books and stuff, because I read a book written by one of these guys, it may have been the one that was on TV, I don't remember his name. That was eye-opening for me, but that was like back in the 80s. You know, they've been coming out with, you know, trying to make a buck any way they can off this stuff for a long time now.
So the guy who played Paulie Walnuts had a rap sheet.
Huh.
Born and raised in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn. Before becoming an actor, was arrested 28 times, first for stealing nickels from a newsstand at the tender age of 7. Went on to become a notorious stick-up artist, getting pinched time and time again and serving 2 prison terms on weapons and armed robbery charges. He says, "I got 28 arrests and only 2 convictions, so you gotta admit, I have a pretty good acting record."
That's funny.
Let's see here. We got Will's feedback, but I think he combines some thoughts about The Corner, so we'll wait on this one. But got some feedback from Steven, and I'll read this one. He says, "There's no denying The Sopranos is the pinnacle of all HBO series. Rewatching the pilot episode of this landmark series solidified any doubt I may have had. James Gandolfini, may you rest in peace, was born to play Tony Soprano, surrounded by an excellent supporting cast of stress-inducing family members and tracksuit-wearing wise guys, the season one tagline rings true: if one family doesn't kill him, the other will. Never before had a television series been allowed to breathe, just breathe, the long, uncomfortable silences that pass between Tony and Dr. Melfi in a psychiatrist's office, or the infinite void of words not spoken by Tony's mother as Junior hints that her son, Tony, may need to be taken care of. 10 out of 10 fucking ducks. Thank you, Stephen.
With today's pharmacology, no one needs to suffer with feelings of exhaustion and depression.
Here we go. Here comes the Prozac.
All right. So I guess we can rate this and then answer the important question. If you had time and the ability, would you watch another episode?
We did.
We watched 3 seasons.
We watched 3 seasons, but that's all we had.
That's all my cousin lent me.
Yeah, well, that's all he had.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, we enjoyed it.
Do you want to rate it? Because we rate things here.
Yeah, we do.
We can't just give our opinion. We have to assign a number to it.
Okay. Well, I liked this episode a lot, but there's many more better episodes of this show. So as an intro, it's pretty good. It has to do some exposition to get us introduced to the situation and the people. So I'll give it 8 out of 10 gabagoos.
You sure do love your gabagoo.
Mal.
Yes. I like this episode a lot. I find the dialogue sometimes, like when they're talking about mobster business things, I find it a little bit hard to follow because the characters are not established. So I just find that of a little bit of a challenge. But overall, the show is really good. You know, like when we started watching this episode, I was like, finally a good show.
You didn't like Life Stories, Families in Crisis?
Well, I did kind of enjoy that, but, you know, for different reasons, not for good show reasons. So, yeah, I'll give it an 8 out of 10 CD players? What's that?
What is that? I don't want that. Oh, you'll enjoy it. I don't want that. What's your favorite kind of music? Let's dance. I don't want to dance with you.
What a mom.
Well, before we hear what Carol thinks, I will rate this. It's not my favorite pilot. It's got a lot of exposition. I'm not a fan of the narration, even though framing it in the psychiatrist's office was probably the smartest use of such a mechanic. Or rather, such a use of such a convention. But it was still very funny in spots. I love Livia Soprano. She is the mother from hell. There's a lot of great scenes. I already mentioned the scene in the church. I love the idea of Carmela punishing her daughter, saying you can't go to Aspen because you snuck out of your house, but then wanting to go have tea and cucumber sandwiches under the portrait of Eloise in the plaza. And Meadow's like, fuck that. I want to go to Aspen. I'm a teenager now.
Yeah.
It just felt like a natural mother-daughter pairing. Just like Harold said, you're coming into this family already feeling like these relationships have been fully formed for years and years. And that's great. So
can I just say, ugh, teenagers?
Ugh, the worst. Still, it's pretty great stuff. I'm going to go a 9 out of 10. 9 out of 10 peculiar tasting sausages. Because I love the episode just kind of ends at the party, but I loved Olivia. Just she gets that one last dig in there. You're using mesquite. That makes the sausage taste peculiar.
Can't
do anything right.
It's interesting. Everybody's mentioned that about how like one character or another reminds them of someone in their own life. You know, that's another sign of a good show, when you can relate it to your own life. You know,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that definitely was one of the things for me. I mean, basically none of these characters were, you know, I feel like I've met most of these characters at one point or another in my life.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And I did watch another episode. I would like to watch more episodes of it. I liked the pilot. Exposition is something you've got to have. So I felt like they did it well. That I thought it was groundbreaking in an interesting way, in that just the very beginning was unusual. I mean, it had the music and then it just went to absolute silence. And with, you know, the doctor and everything. And for the first couple minutes of a pilot episode of a show to be just quiet with people just looking at each other, right there you have to say, oh, okay, they're going for, you know, something a little different. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give it, just because I don't know what's coming, I'd give it 9 out of 10 Godfather references.
Very good.
One thing I will say about this show is it's like hard to keep track of who's who and what their jobs are, and like
that's what I was just saying.
Like what their relationship is to somebody else.
Yeah, like when they were talking at the strip club, like I had a hard time following what they were discussing. And it's like that every time they're at the strip club. I never know what's going on, like truly what's going on. I'm like, who's this again? Like, what's going on? Who are they trying to kill now?
Yeah.
One thing though. That came off to me as very true. I mean, that book I read years ago, and I wish I remembered what it was called or anything. It was by one of these guys, and they were making a buck off, you know, telling tales and such. And the thing that impressed me about it was they were constantly playing an angle. This guy, he always had three things going on. And if he needed money for one thing, then he would, you know, he had three other jobs that he would do to make money for that job or to pay his, you know, bail or something like that. It's like, oh, yeah, we need bail, so let's do this job to get, you know. And it was stuff that, you know, it was just a different way of thinking. And so the whole thing of these guys being totally interconnected and having and not being able to figure out who's who and all of that just seemed very natural.
Yeah. Well, it was just like, it's like Uncle June wants to whack Pussy or whatever. And
there's two pussies.
Yeah. And then later on, this guy was referred to as Pussy. And like, oh, so he wants to whack him. And then later on, you see the picture of the guy. That's not the same guy. It's like, no, he wants to whack Little Pussy. You think he'd want to whack Big Pussy? Like, why name those two guys the same thing? Are they related?
That's what that's like. It's a small community. Yeah, I know.
It just adds to the confusion. But I mean, it's perfectly watchable.
And I think there's supposed to be that confusion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you're supposed to get that. I think it's supposed to give you the idea of the fact that it's a big palette. You know, that there's a lot out there. It is a small community, but it's spread out. So there's, and everybody knows everybody else, and everybody knows who you're talking about,
and everybody has a nickname.
Okay, our second topic of discussion. I have a feeling we're not going to spend too much time on this.
I have a feeling you're right.
Yep.
I'm Charles S. Dutton. Last summer I came back here to Baltimore, Maryland, to film a story about life on the corner. I grew up and hung out on a corner just like this one, not too far from here. A corner like thousands of others across the country. It's the place to go if you want to be seen, and to a lot of folks, it's the information center of the neighborhood. You want to know who got the good drugs? You want to know who got killed last night and why and who did it? You come here. The contradiction of it is, on one hand, the corner pulsates with life, the energy of human beings trying to make it to the next day. But also, it's a place of death, be it the slow death of addiction or the suddenness of gunshots. Back when I was hanging out here, it was bad. But 30 years ago, Maryland had only 5 major penal institutions. Today, there are 28 and more being planned. Yet the corners haven't gone away. There are 100 open-air drug markets in Baltimore, thousands in America. whether the rest of the country wants to think about them or not. This film is a true story of men, women, and children living in the midst of the drug trade. Their voices are too rarely heard.
Though I will say that I do acknowledge it had good intentions.
Very earnest.
And it probably accomplished what it set out to do. It was nonetheless not that interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about The Corner, which was a 6-episode miniseries that debuted in April 2000, based on a book written by Baltimore Sun reporter David Simon and former Baltimore homicide detective Ed Burns, considered to be something of a precursor to The Wire, which is considered by many to be one of the great television shows of all time. We'll be watching the pilot for that pretty soon. The authors spent 7 years working with the people of the neighborhood to write their book. And The Corner itself is located on West Fayette Street and North Monroe Street in Baltimore, Maryland.
Maryland.
Sorry?
Or as they refer to it, it's Maryland.
Maryland?
Maryland. That's how they referred to it.
Maryland.
And if you put in those street, that intersection, into Google Maps, you can take a little street view tour of The Corner.
Cool.
Yeah.
Is it cool?
Well, it's cleaner than it looks on the miniseries, and it's less busy. Mm. But I don't, you know, that could be for any number of reasons. I don't know.
Also, 17 years later.
Drove through there. Yeah, I mean, there were still people on stoops. There was still trash accumulating in spots.
Mm.
It does not look nice. It's very urban. There are no trees. It's just rows of houses, like townhouses. There's no landscaping. There's nothing that looks pretty or, you know, like you would want to spend any time there. It's not like, oh, well, there's a nice little cafe with some outside dining. I think I'll have a sandwich and a cup of soup. No, there's nothing like that. It doesn't look very nice. But it looks better than how it was portrayed in this miniseries. The miniseries did win a Primetime Emmy Award for Outstanding Miniseries and a Peabody Award.
Mm, interesting.
In the second episode, which is a lot better, I think, than the first, by the way. I don't know. Did anybody watch the second one?
No, I didn't really want to.
I couldn't, no.
I don't blame you for not wanting to.
I figured it would be better, but I didn't want to.
No.
The second episode follows DeAndre, the kid.
Oh, really?
Mm. Yeah. And, you know, I think the problem with the first episode, after having watched the second episode, and it being a whole lot better, I realized that one of the problems with the first episode was that you're following around a heroin addict.
Yeah.
And the heroin addicts are not, I mean, they're inherently not interesting people in a lot of ways, because even the high that they're trying to find is something that is totally numbing.
Right.
You know, like...
mellowing, yeah.
Yeah, it, you know, where... the scene with the guy who's almost falling over and doesn't quite, and they start talking about gravity. How is he standing up?
Yeah,
that was literally something that detective friend of mine pointed out one day when we were in the city and there was a heroin addict on the street corner doing the exact same thing,
mm-hmm.
Not quite with the arms the same way, but he said, watch, she'll look like she's going to fall, and then she'll just, at the last second, she'll, you know. And it was like, whoa, that's very weird. And it was like, yeah, that's heroin.
Mm-hmm.
Well, watching this, I'm trying to think, you know, what are the major plot points? And there aren't a lot of major plot points, because not a lot happens, which is why it's going to be very painful for the person who was selected by the randomizer to do the 60-second plot summary.
Oh,
you know it's
right.
not going to be
that.
Mel.
I'm almost disappointed that it's not going to be me, because I would have.
Are you volunteering?
About a whole lot of nothing. No? But I would have been talking. It would have been fun to just ramble on about a whole lot of nothing. Just
well, that's. I have a feeling that that's what's going to happen. let's find out who the unfortunate person is going to be.
Think.
Please no. Please no. Matt, thank God. It nearly went to Mel, which meant it would have gone over to me. But Matt, you've got 60 seconds. Maybe Carol gave you some material with the guy who almost fell over.
You can do this.
You can do it.
Huh?
Oh, wait. I have to get my stopwatch out. Oh. 60 seconds to summarize as much of Gary's blues as possible without going over, or you lose, or ridiculously under, because then you'd be a heroin chump. And you're going in 3, 2, 1, go.
It's a good thing you just reminded me his name is Gary, because I forgot. So Gary lives near the corner, and he lives with his parents, I guess, and he's got a son who's kind of estranged. That's about all you really find out about him. Oh, no, wait. He used to have several jobs in a business, and then he got into heroin. That's all you learn. That's all you need to know, I guess. And then the rest of the episode is Gary needs money for drugs. Gary looks for money for drugs. Gary finds drugs. Or Gary doesn't find drugs. Gary does drugs or doesn't do drugs. Gary talks to people about drugs. Gary tries to get more drugs. Gary has a scheme to get money to get drugs. Gary tries to get drugs. Gary either does or doesn't get drugs. Then Gary either does or doesn't do those drugs. Then he's either high or he's not. Then he goes and tries to get more drugs. And then at the end, he has a chance to redeem himself, and he plays basketball for a sec, and then he goes and does drugs. The end.
1:08.
You did worse than me.
But he was very complete.
That much information.
Yeah.
But he was very complete. You have to give him that.
You left out the part about the Korean grocery store.
Or the part about going to school.
And that his son is starting to deal drugs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was good, though.
It was great. Nicely done. Nicely done.
You still get the horn, though.
Oh. I'm going to go do some drugs.
Do you guys know Charles Dutton?
Nope.
I've seen him in stuff.
The guy who started the thing?
What have I seen him in, though?
So he's not an actor?
Yeah.
He's an actor.
Yes, he's an actor, but he was... when he first came on the acting scene, I saw him in his Broadway debut, which was in the... was it called The Piano? The Pianist? The Piano, I think. And he made a huge... entrance onto the Broadway scene. This is many years ago. And one of the things was that he was an ex-con. So when we were talking before about in The Sopranos, Charles Dutton, who was the guy at the beginning and who I believe directed it.
Yes.
I don't know if he directed both episodes. I know he directed one of them.
I think he directed all of them.
Did he? Yeah. Yeah, he was an ex-con, and that was one of the things that he has kind of stayed with that. That's like part of his whole thing. When, you know, he's an actor, but that ex-con persona is still kind of there. You know, he got out of it, and he left it behind, and he made it. And there's a certain amount of wanting to give back to the community that, you know, kind of follows him. So right from the beginning, one of my first notes was that, you know, this has a very earnest feel, like when he's talking about it. I was like, maybe
you could tell
that
it was personal and important to him.
Like,
bad about not liking it. I was like, I want to like it, but...
As I say, the second episode is a lot better. We aren't talking about humor here at all, but just what Matt was saying when he was like, you know, he's either looking for drugs, or he's buying drugs, or he's either taking the drugs, or he's not taking them. I have to agree that, and we're talking about a heroin addict, and whereas the son is at a different time of his life, and he's actually trying to figure things out, and it's a whole lot more interesting to watch someone trying to figure things out as in a big sense, like, what am I going to do with my life, how do I deal with two parents who are drug addicts and make my own way, and how much of the society I'm living in am I going to take with me? You know,
I do have to admit that his parts of the episode were probably more interesting than his dad's.
Although I couldn't get I couldn't get over his 90s attire, his whole 90s look.
It's funny how, like, the Sopranos had tracksuits, and this had tracksuits as well. It's just such a 90s thing, you know?
Yeah.
I think the actor who plays the son has a lot of natural charisma.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which makes him fun to watch.
Yeah.
He looked like the guy from Good Burger, though.
Oh, he did! He totally did! That's funny.
Plus, you're hoping that the son could find a way out of his situation? Like, there's still time for him because he's young?
Is the son just a dealer and he doesn't take them himself?
Looks
like
He might be smoking some, but not, he's not into, you know, any of the hard stuff. Yeah. At least not in the second episode. And it really does, you know, there's a lot more going on than, you know, I think it was a bad choice for this pilot to make it about Gary.
Yeah.
Could they have swapped the episodes without missing a beat? Or do you think that there was something in the pilot that you really needed to have seen to make the second episode worthwhile?
I think they could have restructured it pretty easily. I'm thinking about whether if you just came in on the second episode,
you have no backstory on Gary or anything.
Is Gary even in the second episode?
Yeah, but you get more backstory on Gary and the mom in the second episode than you did in the first.
So if they had put the backstory more in the first episode, it would have been a better episode. Because I like the scenes when saw him as a young man and he was like at university.
Yeah, I agree.
And then later on, you see him reading like a chemistry textbook.
Yeah, so
that was. Oh, there's a there's a story there.
Yeah,
but we didn't get that.
Yeah,
right. And later on, you see them picking out the house. Did you get that that house that they're like? The abandoned house that they're sliding into. He says at one point, I used to live here with my wife and son.
Yeah.
Did you catch that?
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
They have, like, when they bought that house and what it looked like and what they were looking at buying before that and, you know, the relationship between them, Gary and I'd forgotten what the wife's name was. What their relationship was like, and you get the feeling you're going to see how that whole thing came about and how Gary went from one thing to, you know, went from this successful person to who he is now. And you have some interaction between the two, Gary and the wife, that's, you know, them getting a little nostalgic and getting a little hopeful and stuff. It's pretty different from the first one. And I honestly am not sure why I almost feel like they could have taken 15 minutes from the first one, put it into the second one, and that would have been fine. I guess they wanted to really give you a real strong look at Gary, but I think they would have been better off or have flipped. You know, flipping the two might have been better. Showing the, you know, starting off with DeAndre and then going back to Gary. The second one would have been boring, but at least you would have had some idea of, you know.
Well, I think that the episode, the pilot episode, sorry to interrupt.
No.
Okay.
No, go.
I think that the pilot did give us a good sense of place. You know, it felt like being dropped on an alien world or in a post-apocalyptic world. And so as much as I didn't care about Gary, because as Matt said, he was looking for drugs. He's looking for money for drugs. And when he got the drugs, he either did them or he didn't do them. And then he went to look for more drugs. That really is the entire episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I had to find my interest and my amusement in a lot of background things in supporting characters, background characters, and just eating up the place.
Yeah. One of the background.
I couldn't get into Gary as a character.
Yeah. One of the background characters played Freddy on House of Cards, the barbecue guy that the president likes. If you've ever seen House
Real?
Of Cards.
Oh, was that the guy who was like a kind of like hunched over at one point?
And like an afro.
Was that the guy from the couch? He's on a couch, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is he on House of Cards? I haven't seen all of House of Cards. I've only seen a couple of seasons.
Freddy, the guy who owns the rib place. The barbecue.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I've always liked Candy Alexander since she was on News Radio. And here she plays the mother.
Oh, okay.
Looking sad.
Brother Steve, around.
Be upstairs. Why are you always coming down here to get Stevie the cop for you? What, you think he don't get burnt? He get burnt, everybody get burnt. It's all in the game.
I know.
Gabby, you should have never got caught up in this shit.
Yeah, all right, friend.
And your son's starting to run wild. He don't need to be out here neither.
What's DeAndre doing?
What you think he doing? He's starting to creep out on them corners. Where you think he got money enough to hand you off $10?
You can't put a stop to that?
Gary, that boy is 15. Much as you and me be messing up, he feel like he ain't got the answer to no one.
He ain't in school.
Warming up today.
Hey, Stevie.
She looked so familiar, I didn't know why. Yeah.
And she was also on one of the CSIs, CSI Miami.
Never watched it.
My mother couldn't used to watch it. She watched all the CSIs. But I remember her from News Radio.
News Radio was that the half hour Sorkin one? No.
No, that was something else. But
Sports Night. That was Sports Night. Never mind.
News Radio had Dave Foley, Stephen Root, Andy totally. Dick, Maura Tierney, Vicki Lewis, Phil Hartman. For a while.
Yeah, okay. So, I know which one that is. I never watched that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people did, but it ran for 5 seasons.
Yeah. Used to watch it.
Yeah. There were quite a few people that looked familiar. Even Gary, when he was cleaned up, looked familiar. But I don't know why.
We might see some of these actors again in The Wire. From what I've read, they were like cast in sort of different roles, so you might see them as like detectives, police officers.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've never seen The Wire. It's on my list of things to see, along with The Sopranos.
I have the Blu-ray set, and I'm looking at it right now, but I haven't watched it yet. I feel like I just have to be in the right headspace to watch it. I have the time to kind of like do a deep dive into it. I know it's supposed to be good.
So The Corner is only 6 episodes? It only went for 6 episodes?
Correct.
The guy narrating it at the first of it made it sound like it was a movie. I don't know why.
I think it probably could have worked better as a movie.
Yeah. You mean if they had taken all 6 episodes and condensed them?
I think so, because I don't think there's enough in this to be an episode.
I think I agree. I don't know much about the other episodes, obviously, but it probably would have worked better.
Yeah, I think if they had taken some from this first episode and just included it in the second one. The second one was a much, much better.
Gary surprised me at one point when his mother gave him the $20 to go buy Hamburger Helper. I thought for sure he was going to spend that money on drugs.
He was thinking,
I was like, that woman's not going to get her Hamburger Helper. did, though. And he brought her the change.
Yeah. Because he loves his mama.
Do you Canadians know what Hamburger Helper is?
Yes!
Yeah, we have it.
Okay.
It was for the church, too. Hmm. She said they needed it for the church.
We also know what potatoes are, Matt.
I don't know. They're from South America.
Except here we call them potat.
We weren't sure they got all the way up to Canada. They were from South America originally, you know.
That is good. It does get pretty cold up here.
Yeah.
Lie. Too cold for Hamburger Helper.
Actually, do you know what the French translation of potato is? Pomme de terre, which means?
Tomato of the earth, right?
No, it's apples of the earth.
Apples of the earth, right. I've never been good with fruit.
What's the French translation of Hamburger Helper?
You know what? I don't know. I'm going to look this up now.
Well, what is helper?
Ed? Like helping? Like, I don't know.
Aid?
Hamburger aid? I don't know.
look up Hamburger Helper France or something. I don't know.
Hasn't there got to be a French translation of everything?
Yeah, but if it's like a
trademark,
a brand.
Yeah, it's Hamburger Helper in French. Hamburger Helper produit. So yeah, it's still same. Hamburger Helper. Yeah.
Well, how would you say ground meat or grounded meat?
Bœuf haché. Like, yeah, like it would be like chopped up beef, basically. Mm-hmm. It's not as interesting. There's other funny French stuff, but
like that's Home Alone not. 2.
Home Alone 2. I missed the plane.
And now I'm stuck in New
now
York.
Now I'm stuck in New York. That's literally the title.
So what is that in French?
Maman, j'ai raté l'avion. What was the rest of it? Like something about New York.
Now I'm stuck in New York.
Yeah.
Which is what in French?
I don't remember. Oh. It was like a pretty long title.
But the first was just Home Alone?
No, the first was like
what's that the
plane one and then
the title for
plane and now I'm stuck in New York.
Oh, that was Home Alone?
Yeah.
Oh, good grief.
Yeah. I know. Anyways.
Let's jump into some feedback here. Matt, I'll have you read this one from Harold.
Okay.
We found the title for Home Alone 2.
Okay.
So, Mom, proceed. I missed the plane again, and I'm lost in New York.
Say it in French.
You want me to say it in French? Maman, j'ai encore raté l'avion, et je suis perdu dans New York.
I love it. All right. So this is from Harold again?
Yes.
I had never seen The Corner until this weekend. I was a little confused with the first episode because it wasn't clear to me if it was going to be an anthology with a mostly or completely different set of characters each episode, or if it would be a continuing story. That confusion detracted a little bit from the episode, although it was still a very solid standalone story about the life of a junkie. As someone who has seen The Wire before, I recognize actors and recurring phrases like it's all in the game or lingo like re-up from there. Like The Wire, it also appears to use some of the real-life people whose stories are being told as actors playing different parts. I'm also pretty sure that the bit about testing a girl to find out if she is really into you by asking her to make you a sandwich was reused in its entirety in The Wire.
Interesting.
Things for me really picked up with the second episode, and from there on out, I binged the whole thing, which is thankfully on YouTube. Although you will have to try to ignore the French subtitling, which completely fails to catch the gist of the dialogue. For example, I damn straight and several other variants of yes, true or correct are all translated as vraiment.
Vraiment, which means really?
I highly recommend watching the entire series. The remaining episodes mostly focus on Gary, his ex-wife Fran, and son DeAndre, but we get a lot of secondary characters who are all fully fleshed out. Some are addicts, some are dealers, and there are others, and there are those whose lives are affected by addicts and dealers. It does a great job of weaving stories and world building so that something that happens in one episode will come back in a later episode with a surprising twist. The Corner is a show about how people, especially but not limited to dope fiends, lie to themselves and make self-defeating decisions, and how drug addicts will do anything to get a fix. I think the most jaw-dropping moment was when the guy sees two junkies breaking into his neighbor's house, and he tells them he'll be cool with it if they hook him up. One of the recurring bits that I liked was the bumming of cigarettes. One of the reasons Gary buys singles is that this
means
this way
he never has to run or never has to deal with people bumming cigarettes from him. On the other hand, when we meet his ex-wife Fran, someone asks for a cigarette and she quickly hides her pack unconvincingly, claims she just lit up her last one. No one believes her, but it's her way of saying she isn't going to share. This demonstrates the difference between Gary and Fran. He is too soft and not made for this environment, but she grew up in it and knows how to play the game. Throughout the series, Gary is sort of an audience stand-in. He is the one who occasionally expresses disbelief at the crazy shit the junkies will do. Then, most of the time, he ends up doing the same shit. At times, I wondered if it was believable that Gary could have fallen from a successful middle-class life so quickly, but at the end of the final episode, we meet four of the real-life people whose lives were depicted in the series, and they made it seem like everything was depicted fairly accurately.
That's interesting.
I found an article about the premiere when it was like, screened at a theater or something. And it says, among those waiting to see the film were 23-year-old Della Burks and 19-year-old Trina, who said that they were cousins of DeAndre, I can't pronounce his last name, the charismatic 15-year-old drug dealer portrayed in the film by actor Sean Nelson. Although anxious to get inside the theater, the women said they weren't always happy with the at times grim portrayal of their relatives, which is based on a nonfiction book by former Sun reporter David Simon and former city police detective Edward Burns. Some of it was true, but some of it was lies, said Burke. Most of it was lies. Simon, who spent the hour or so preceding the premiere greeting both people who worked on the film and those whose lives are portrayed in it, said he understood the women's feelings, but stood by what he and Burns wrote. He says, "We treated Gary and his life with a lot of respect. I don't know how to tell the story in a way that would be less painful."
Well,
I have been looking at some nonfiction having to do with addiction and that kind of stuff. And I'm always surprised when I hear these things of people later in life getting addicted to this stuff. But it does happen. And once you're addicted to it, it's real easy for everything to just fall apart.
Mm.
Well, we don't have drug rehabilitation in this country that's affordable. And so how does somebody in a no income, afford that?
Yeah. Exactly.
I imagine that this part of Baltimore is sort of the same story we hear of a lot of places where there were factories, now the factories are gone. Without employment, you're just adrift. Make America great again. Bring back those factories. Bring back those coal mining jobs.
That's going to happen.
Open those mines. Let's get down in there, down that dirt.
But even they were talking about how well off he was. Like, he had a car and like a house and all this stuff.
All the flashbacks to like the 50s and 60s or whatever. Was there no drugs back then? Like, is it really just drugs that ruined America?
Well, there have always been drugs, but
that neighborhood particularly was affected by something in particular.
I think it was the factory closing. Yeah. That's where a lot of the jobs were, and the factory disappeared, and people didn't have an income. So what are you going to do during your day? You're going to just kill the painful feelings inside of you, so you're going to turn to drugs. And the people that do stay, that still have employment, end up leaving because their refrigerator gets stolen. And they work an 8-hour day or 10-hour day, they come home and their refrigerator's gone. So they move out of the neighborhood, and everyone that's left is the people who, you know, are on drugs.
Yeah.
Look here, Tony. When I started this here metal game, wasn't but a few people doing this, you know? It's a time you can find like a vacant property, a row house renovation. You know, go in there at night and rip up all that good plumbing, man. Just rip it on out. Got to the point that the contractors, man, they started putting plastic plumbing in because they know that the metal got legs. And all this metal gets melted down, man, up in Pittsburgh or somewhere. Yeah, Tony, I don't know who owns this place, but I bet you got a mansion out there in the county.
Huh. While we out here hustling.
It's good copper right there.
18.
Oh, 18? Come on, look here, Chief. I know the value of good metal, okay? This got to be at least 25.
You want the 18?
This ain't even right.
You don't want the 18.
Yeah, take 18.
Well, also, there was a huge influx of drugs in, like, the 60s to 70s, where, and, you know, you can hear all kinds of conspiracy theories. I have no idea. It's not something I've investigated. Some people feel that law enforcement really didn't care that much about it because it was going into the inner cities and it was affecting mostly people of color, and therefore who cares? And they thought it wasn't going to spread out into the suburbs. Ha ha, sure, that's going to happen. Yeah. And, you know, So there was a huge influx. When I say there's always been drugs, there were drugs, but they weren't as extensive in, you know, whole communities and stuff. Like, well, they were at different times in our history, they were extensive in certain communities, but they were usually small contained communities, not entire, large portions of cities and stuff.
Plus a number of members of the community of communities like that were incarcerated too. Possibly for small drug offenses, but their punishment was severe. So they went to jail where they couldn't earn an income for their families, and they didn't get job training when they were in jail or drug rehabilitation.
Yeah.
And that has a spiraling effect.
Mm-hmm. And once they get out, there's no jobs for felons. And
it's just self-perpetuating, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very self-perpetuating. And as he said at the beginning when he was saying there were nine penitentiaries in Maryland when he was a kid, and now there's 28 and they're building more.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's
we've got
business.
A major problem with privatizing prison and making it a for-profit thing. I mean, it's a huge problem. I'm sorry.
You're just making me
went to a conference about it.
You're just making me want to watch more Orange is the New Black, because it's all about that now, basically. Yeah.
They did touch on the
private prison
stuff.
I stopped watching Orange.
In the most recent season, they did talk about private prisons.
Yeah. If you stopped watching it, I'd suggest starting again, because the first season is all about Piper, and it's not that great. But then
Piper is probably the worst character in the show. Everybody else is so interesting.
Season 4, I think, is the best season they had so far.
Yeah.
It gets better and better.
We've got more feedback from Nutty.
You want me to read it?
I do.
Yeah.
All right, settle down.
I stopped when it got into too much embarrassment humor for me. So I can't deal with embarrassment humor.
All right.
So
understandable.
There was one point when it just got too much, and I literally had to turn it off in the middle of the episode, and I just never went back. But, that's one of my little faults. I can't deal with it.
That's all right. All right, from Nutty. The Corner I never saw before.
Yeah.
So I watched the first two episodes. Depressing, because it is pretty real. Makes me sad how true to life it is. Another instance of really good actors in this, and the direction explains a lot of the accuracy. Plus the writers. In just two episodes, I find myself caring a lot about these characters and knowing that there won't be happy endings for them. I don't even think I heard about this miniseries, but it looks like it's got a lot of recognition, which is good. Wish it was more popular, though. I think art like this is important. While both of these shows focus on illegal activity, one is people making money off the misery of others, and the other is the miserable ones who are being exploited. It's interesting to have the two sides to compare and contrast. I think in the end, I value the two episodes of The Corner more than any of The Sopranos I watched, even if The Sopranos was more entertaining and not as sad.
Yeah. Yeah. It's... I mean, she's got very good points.
It does.
I say the second episode is a whole lot better than the first.
Land it better and made it... And I hate to say that, make it entertaining for us. You know, we deserve entertainment. I know that's not really, it's not so much supposed to be about entertainment. It's supposed to be, you know, showing you the other side of people's lives and stuff like that. But it's not something that I enjoy watching. I don't enjoy watching someone, I don't know, do drugs and then look for drugs. And then, it's not a lifestyle that I agree with, I guess. I know it's not something that a lot of people have a choice in, I guess. Or they do have a choice, but the circumstances in their life prevents them from making a better choice. Mm. I don't know.
It is interesting that this is like a show with a all black cast.
I did think the actors were really good in this. Yeah, what they were given, they were excellent.
Recently, Luke Cage got a lot of press for being an all-black cast, and, this was way before that. Mm. But I just wish it was, more compelling to watch.
I hate it's not entertaining enough because it feels so first world problem of me to say, oh, entertain me.
Mm. No, I understand what you're saying. There's a sameness in the tone and a lack of direction and plot, which makes it just feel so meandering.
Yeah.
And I feel bad that I don't like it because it is important.
Yeah.
And it has good intentions.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's how I felt watching it. Yeah, I just felt like I want to like this, but I can't because it's good enough, you know.
I don't think shows us anything that we don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe 10 years ago, or however long this was.
Yeah.
2000, 15, so it's 17 years ago.
17 years ago. Maybe 17 years ago, it was like a revelation for people. Maybe for like white people in the suburbs, they didn't know. They closed their eyes, their minds, and hearts like to that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But all these years later, I think we've read so many articles and heard so many think pieces and seen so many other like forms of entertainment that are with this kind of agenda that this is like, well, kind of know what this story is. You're not really showing me anything new.
Mm.
Let me read Steven's feedback.
Okay.
He says, and you guys thought Oz was depressing. You know you're in for a treat when all the episode titles of the 6-part miniseries end with the blues. Gary's blues. DeAndre's blues. Fran's blues. Dope Fiend blues. Corner Boy blues. And Everyman's blues. Uh-huh. This miniseries is based on the nonfiction novel The Corner, A Year in the Life of an Inner City Neighborhood, written by David Simon and Ed Burns. Ed Burns was a Baltimore City detective for 20 years, where he met Baltimore Sun crime reporter David Simon. Simon also wrote Homicide, A Year on the Killing Streets. Look forward to seeing these two collaborate again on HBO's The Wire and Generation Kill. Fantastic performances from both Candy Alexander and lead T.K. Carter, a far departure from how I remember him in Punky Brewster.
Yeah.
For more on Punky Brewster, tune into the Ramjack podcast. We steal our 60-second plot summary from them. Baltimore native Charles S. Dutton introduces the show, and while I usually enjoy me some rock, I did not like his role as an off-camera interviewer. Those segments did not work. I understand the need for this role, to extract the inner thoughts of various people, which is probably an exact recreation of how David Simon conducted his interviews for the book. I guess the bloliloquy hadn't been invented yet. Or the blowjobalogs. Consider this a microcosmic preview of HBO's The Wire, both in subject matter and recycled actors. Clark Peters, Corey Parker Robinson, Maria Broom, Lance Reddick, and Delaney Williams. 8 out of 10 swollen hands.
Yeah, the guy at the end, he had like something wrong with his hands, didn't he?
I didn't notice.
I didn't rewind it, but the very last guy they interviewed, I was like, whoa, those are some weird hands.
I thought... Hold on. Will's feedback is trying to play. I thought I had missed something when Gary was suddenly in jail.
What do you mean?
Oh, he did... One day... He's on the corner. The next day, he's calling his mother from jail.
They did skip quite quickly.
No, it was they went to a mall and
no, I know he went to JCPenney and they got caught stealing.
Yeah.
And then I think
they did show him getting off the bus and going into the mall. It didn't look much like a mall. It looked like a business. You know, it looked like a big corporate headquarters or something. And I really wasn't sure what they were where they were going. I kind of missed it.
I missed it.
Oh, that's a disgusting set of hands.
Try and play Will's feedback from my phone here. Let's see how this works.
You guys, a picture of his hand.
Oh, yay.
No, I didn't see it.
Disgusting. I don't even know what's going on there.
Can I make it bigger?
It just looks infected.
Yeah, it probably is.
Click on it, yeah.
Was he the one that was shooting up through his vein on his hands?
Neck? Was it the ass guy or the neck guy? That's the neck guy,
I think.
Well, he had scars all down one side of his neck. He had scars on his face.
Yeah.
He was a mess.
Yeah. Oh, that's
cool. Which, you know, that whole, it'll do it to you, you know?
That's gross.
All right, I'm going to try and play Will's feedback here.
Hello, you Hooplecast motherfuckers. About The Sopranos and The Corner. Next time I'm going to try really hard to watch the pilots before I send in feedback, but I can give overall impressions. The Sopranos, I never actually saw the pilot for The Sopranos because I started watching during season 3, and I keep telling myself I'm going to go back and watch The Sopranos, but still haven't gotten around to it. One of these days it's going to happen, but the 4 seasons I did see, seasons 3 through 6, they were fucking awesome. Yeah, I really, really loved some of the characters, especially the members of Tony's crew. Loved Carmella. The kids were annoying, but Carmella, yeah, Edie Falco, she was, I think for a while she did both Oz and The Wire. Oz and The Sopranos. So yeah, it's a good show. I think it ended strongly. The Corner. So The Corner, I think I watched that while I was watching The Wire, or maybe right after I started watching The Wire, because I'm sure Matt has told you it's done by the creator of The Wire. And this show has a lot of the same actors. It's also set in Baltimore. So I think it was also my first introduction to Candy Alexander, who would later be on another David Simon show called Treme. And I think she's just fucking awesome. This is where she kind of won me over as an actress. I think she may have been in some other stuff I had seen at some point, but I did remember her. So The Corner is just really good, very emotional, very intense. Only 6 episodes, so definitely worth watching. It won't take you that long to watch it, and maybe if you watch it, you'll want to check out The Wire. But yeah, I give thumbs up to both. I'll try to watch the pilots next time. Just busy. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Will, you have to go back and watch seasons 1 and 2. I watched the show from the beginning, The Sopranos, I mean. And there was a period when I was at university. I didn't have HBO. I think I told you this. My friend was sending me the tapes for Oz. He sent me The Sopranos also.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So I got to watch it on VHS.
Nice.
He would send me like a tape every 2 weeks because I have 2 episodes on a tape. And then I think my parents had HBO, but they had HBO, but they weren't watching The Sopranos for some reason. And I was at their house and I turned it on, and it was the episode College, which is kind of a famous episode. It was like episode 6 or 7 in the first season. And non-spoilery, Meadow is looking at colleges, and she goes on a road trip with her father, who has to slink away to kill a guy.
I remember that episode.
And this is when she first realizes that, like, wait, are you in the mafia?
Yeah.
Because
she was
too young and sheltered to really piece it together, or she didn't want to allow herself to piece it together. And I remember watching that episode because it just happened to be on, and my parents had never seen the show. But they were drawn into it because of how compelling that single episode of TV was. And it's known as being like one of the top episodes of the show, if not the top episode. And then from there on that out, they watched the whole thing.
Nice.
So they kind of dropped in after it had started too.
Mm.
It seems like everyone really likes The Corner. Everyone, all of our feedbackers, Harold, Nutty, Steven, and Will.
Mm.
Again, makes me feel bad that I didn't like it more.
Well, as I said, the second episode really does change. I mean, it changed my opinion of it a lot. So,
I wish the first episode would have been good enough for me to want to watch the second episode. Because as it was, it didn't do that for me.
No, it didn't make me want to watch the second episode either.
But you did. You did.
You just thought you had to.
I thought I was supposed to, and I am dedicated to this podcast. I don't, you know, I mean, unlike some other people, you know,
we're awful people is what you're trying to say. Awful.
Well, I wouldn't put it that way.
I'm just glad that everybody showed up.
That's the least you can hope for, right?
Except for the guests that we were supposed to have, but I think there was some confusion about time zones when he signed up. So no hard feelings there.
Yes.
Yeah. By the way, I had forgotten that Patterson Falls is now a national historical park.
Nice. You should go there like next weekend and take some photos.
Yeah.
I could go there any day of the week and take some photos. I literally almost pass by there Well, my son goes to school in Patterson on Friday nights, so I drive by, not by the falls, but really close to the falls.
Well, now you have your assignment.
They are right over the hill from me.
You can live Facebook it.
You know what? I probably could. You know, that's a good point. I've never even thought about that.
When you get that first shot of dope, it's the best motherfucking feeling in your life. It's better than sex. And every time after that, you looking for the first time over and over again.
Do you want to give us your rating for the corner, Carol?
Well, I almost feel like I should give two ratings, one for the first episode and one for the second. The first episode, I have to agree with you. I wish I liked it more because it is very earnest and it's, you know, it's about a huge problem that we have in this country. But I don't. I just don't think it's good television. So I'd give it maybe, I'm going to say a 5 out of 10 slumping heroin addicts. But the second episode really is so much better. And it makes me say, you know, yeah, I could watch another 4 episodes based on the second episode. If it was based on the first episode, I'd say no way. But and the second episode, I would pop it up to maybe a 7 out of 10 young men with life decisions to make.
So let's average them out at a 6.
Yeah.
We can do that. I permit it.
Yeah, I part of me almost feels like the first episode should have even lower numbers, but I just can't. You know,
I can't.
It's like, I feel bad about making them lower, but yeah, they should be lower.
Matt says, I can and I will. What's your rating?
Yeah, I didn't like this really that much at all. It's good to hear that the second episode is better, because I think, yeah, it is an important subject to tackle, but they just didn't do it in an entertaining way in the first episode, so I'm forced to give it a 4 out of 10 vicious cycles.
Okay. All right, so would you watch another one? I'm going to say, I'm guessing no, but...
Well, I didn't, so no, but like Carol,
everybody talking
Carol about... saying the second episode is better than maybe I would if I didn't have so much other TV I wanted to watch.
Okay. Yeah.
Guess it's my turn.
I think it is.
Yeah. I feel the same way as everybody else, obviously. Like, this episode was just... it felt longer than it was. It felt like it was 2 hours, and it was just an hour.
Yeah.
You know, and I do feel bad for not liking it, because I do agree with everyone, like, it is important to know about this, you know. So, man, I'm gonna have to give it the same as Matt, I guess, a 4 out of 10, scabby people. Oh, is that bad?
Oh. I wonder how entertaining the book is. Not entertaining, like, oh, it's so much fun, but I wonder if the stories that it tells about the residents of the corner, if it's more gripping.
It must be interesting to read about.
Yeah, you know, I think I am going to watch that second episode just for the sake of the podcast, and so that next time we can check in and be like, is it true? Is the second episode really better? Mm-hmm. Or is Carol just out of her mind?
Yeah,
I'd be like,
or maybe I'm just Carol. Maybe I'm just trying to make you feel bad about. Maybe I'm just playing with you.
She totally is. I know it.
Or maybe you watched the second episode, hoping it was better. It wasn't, but you've convinced yourself that it was to make the time you spent watching it worthwhile.
You know, you'll never know unless you watch it.
I said, because I think that I call this the fire walk with me effect, where the people are like, oh, the more times you watch it, the better it is. No, the more times you watch it, the more you feel like you have to justify that you spent time watching it.
How many times have you seen Fire Walk with Me?
Once.
Ha!
And once was too many.
Oh.
I felt the same way about the movie Akira. That movie I really didn't like the first time I watched it. And then the second time I was like, that's all right. And then the third time I was like, masterpiece.
You do appreciate it more mm-hmm. the more you watch it. Yeah, I agree.
That's a thing that happens sometimes, Matt.
Yeah, maybe. Well, so we'll see. So I'm going to watch the second episode before we record next time, and I'll let you know what I thought of it. I do hope that it's better.
Mm.
But for this one, I'm going to give it 4.5 out of 10 bottle cap switcheroos.
You're so generous.
Give it that extra 0.5.
Yeah, the extra 0.5.
Oh. You're too kind.
Yeah. So yeah, that's what we thought of The Sopranos and The Corner. Next time we will be discussing the series 6 Feet Under.
Oh, I've never seen it. I always wanted to watch it.
Yeah, me too.
I might have seen that one.
Might have.
Is that the one? Well, I have to see which. Let me look it up. Go on. I'll look it
up. The one with the people who own the funeral home.
Yeah.
Alan Ball, after he wrote, or did he write or direct American Beauty to such acclaim, created 6 Feet Under for HBO. It's another one of those shows I've seen the entire thing, but I can't really say that it's one of my favorites.
No.
Yeah, I did see it. Mm-hmm. I watched the whole thing.
I always heard it was really good, but yeah.
I have a problem with a lot of the characters. They can be really insufferable.
Oh, yeah?
But it did a lot of really cool things.
Mm.
Oh, and then the first installment of the 10-part miniseries Band of Brothers.
Oh.
Which I've heard of, but I've never seen.
We've seen that.
I love that series. It's great.
It's okay.
What?
I also think it's great.
The first episode is like really, like, it's a shame that we're just doing the first episode because it's like so different than the rest of it.
Yeah.
It's boot camp.
it's you're right. I mean, they don't even go to war in the first.
Mm-hmm.
There's no like combat stuff in the first one.
Speaking of,
it's all training. But I'll both episodes will be available to our Hooplecast audience if they go to the Hooplecast Facebook group, which you can reach by going to hooplecast.com. That's our website.
Speaking of insufferable, David Schwimmer.
David Schwimmer. He's great.
He's so insufferable, though.
he plays a good drill sergeant.
David Schwimmer plays a drill sergeant?
Yeah. Anyways, you'll see.
Yeah.
He does it well.
A little too
he
well.
He makes you okay. hate him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not that hard.
If you didn't already.
Yeah.
So that's next time.
Cool.
As always, send us feedback, hooplecast@gmail.com. Go on iTunes, leave a favorable review. Anyone want to plug or promote anything?
Matt and I have a games podcast called Matt is Wrong About Games.
You guys are so wrong about games.
Yep. Do you like how wrong we are about TV shows? Then come and listen to us be wrong about video games.
Way to sell it.
I just guested on Sofa Dogs podcast with John Pavlich. We did the movie Gross Point Blank.
Mm.
He just put it up the other day. It was fun. I haven't done anything quite like that before. I enjoyed it. Good times.
Matt, what the hell? He's looking at the picture of Hamburger Helper and just like miming eating it.
It looks good. God damn it, it looks good.
It does have a little bit of spinach in it, which makes it more palatable to me. But
I was just looking at pictures of Great Falls. I'm trying to figure out how to post one for you. Anyway, go on.
God, they have a hamburger cake on there.
Making me hungry.
I'm still doing Spartacast with Will. That's about the series Spartacus. We've started the prequel series, prequel mini-series. It's 6 episodes. We've already talked about the first two, so we're nearly halfway through it.
Hmm.
So you can find us at Spartacast.com. And, I'll promote this. Next Sunday, I'll be on Calavici Fashion Cast, talking about Quantum Leap.
Nice.
Ah.
And all the fashions.
Cool.
All right, that's it.
Cool. Is that it, really?
Yeah.
We all right.
Way longer than expected.
Yes, we did.
We had a lot to say about The Sopranos. Mm-hmm. Very little to say about The Corner. But yep. We tried.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay,
yeah.
Bye. Unfuck you.
Bye, fuck off.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Thank you.